AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
The Last Word on Today FM.
Time for The Last Word in the Environment with John Gibbons. Your name came up in dispatches the other night when we were talking about electric vehicles and hybrids and how the EU is backtracking on getting rid of all new combustion engine cars, internal combustion engine cars, from 2035. The battle's been lost in the electric vehicles, it looks like, John. The car manufacturers want to go back to their petrol and diesel, and they're claiming that's what the consumer wants.
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I guess you might say the battle is lost, but what we should be keeping our eye on is the war, right? I was looking up the stats for Ireland, Matt, for electric vehicle sales in 2025. So from January to November of this year, we have sold, now these are pure electrics, not hybrids, pure electrics, 23,400.
What's that, about 17%?
It is 18.79%. Call it one in five. Now these are pure BEVs or pure electrics. When you add in the hybrids, you can put another 20% on that. So I guess my point is, oh, by the way, that is 36.5%, Matt, up on last year.
Yeah, but hang on, do the hybrids count as far as you're concerned?
Not really, no. I mean, I know we've had this discussion before. Hybrids, I call them the light cigarettes of the internal combustion industry, right? It's an attempt at extending and pretending on the part of an industry that is caught in the past. And I make this point, Matt, the internal combustion engine, marvelous servant of humanity, it was actually developed in the late 19th century. So when you see a car, essentially what you're looking at is a series of controlled explosions where you set fire to a flammable toxic liquid and have this explosion that moves the pistons. And then you got about another 2,500 moving parts. You got pistons and camshafts and gear sticks and whatever you're having yourself, right? Now, on the other hand, the electric car is essentially a battery, a couple of motors, and four wheels. That's it. And electronics controlling the whole thing. And the point really about it is that it's such a step change in progress. And I can say this as somebody who's been a full electric driver now for nearly 8 years, right? There's simply no going back. Every now and again, I have to, for example, hire, you know, a diesel or whatever, you know, for a particular purpose.
Right, to get to a faraway distance your electric car won't be able to get to.
No, maybe my other half has gone off in the electric. So let's say I have to hire a diesel, and it is like going back to the 1970s. And that's been completely frank and honest with you. The technology, there's simply no comparison. And this, by the way, isn't just the high end, your Teslas and all the rest. If you get your common or garden 18, 20 grand electric, the first thing about them, of course, is that they're all automatic. There's no gears. There's none of that pulling and shoving and all that stuff. And the second thing is, of course, it's a smooth ride. And let me give you a simple analogy, Matt, if I can, right? For anybody who's trying to get their head around this, the difference between diesel and electric, right? Go into Pierce Station someday, right? Wait until a big old diesel train pulls in, right? And it'll pull into a halt and screech. Then wait for it to pull out and listen to the roaring and the screaming, watch the smoke, the smell, the whole place smells up. And this thing then crawls out at about 5, 10, 15, 20 kilometres an hour. Then alongside it, in comes an electric dart, buzzes in, stops, and takes off like a rocket, and it's gone straight.
But not quite like a rocket, but faster, yes.
But the point, Matt, is that the one is heaving to create enough torque to move its weight. And of course, part of the problem with its weight is it's dragging all this complex mechanics with it. With the other technology, the electric technology, you simplify this and you move it. And the same way, for example, if you went to France or Japan, where they've got the TGV, the high-speed train, or the bullet trains in Japan, they're all electric. And they're electric because they're the fastest thing on wheels.
What about all the damage done when producing the batteries for the electric vehicles?
Sure. I mean, there's damage done in producing everything. The greatest, the number one source of damage done anywhere in the world is in the production, extraction, transport and burning of fossil fuels. That's the number one driver of ecological harm in the world. Not just climate harm, Matt, but also ecological harm. For example, 40% of all the shipping freight in the world is moving fossil fuels from point A to point B. So all those massive emissions associated with shipping, if we moved away from fossil fuels, we can cut them by 40%. The other thing, of course, to be said about fossil fuels is they finance some of the worst regimes in the world. And so every time you burn fossil fuels, you're not just destroying, you know, your own future, but you're also helping to finance regimes really that most Irish people would be appalled by. So it is really, and I suppose the other thing to say about it is that, you know, the electric vehicles give us the opportunity to power from our own resources. So for example, in the month of November, right, 40% of all the electricity produced in Ireland, and this, by the way, is despite our massive spike in data centres, 40% of all our electricity, Matt, was produced indigenously on this island through a combination of wind energy and even some solar, believe it or not. In November 2025, 4% of our electricity was solar. So 40% overall is coming from that route. Now, that means that is money that is staying in Ireland. Now, how could anybody possibly be arguing against this?
But isn't the Minister for Finance and Solicitor Simon Harris saying only this week that we'll probably have higher electricity bills to pay for the capital investment in wind farms? We seem to lose every which way.
Well, I think you'll find that, yes, we definitely need to upgrade our investment in the electrical grid infrastructure. But the biggest drag and draw on the infrastructure, the electric grid infrastructure, is not wind farms. It is data centres. As you know, they're using about 22% of all the electricity produced in Ireland. That is pretty much the equivalent of all the urban electricity use in Ireland, in the state of Ireland. And that, by the way, has all suddenly appeared in the space of 8 to 10 years. It has put colossal pressure on the grid. Airgrid are doing, you know, miracles to keep the thing stable. And yet, despite that, we're achieving the second highest penetration of renewables on the grid in the EU, Matt. And I will say this, and it being the last bulletin of the year on the environment slot, it is important amidst all the gloom to actually acknowledge what we're doing really well.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What are we doing well? Because the addition of wind capacity to the network has been pathetic. We haven't built an offshore wind farm in 20 years in this country, and we're having all sorts of plans and auctions and the rest of it. Are we ever going to get more offshore wind farms? How much more additional onshore wind farms have we added in recent years?
Well, I think let's break this down. First of all, we have about 300 onshore wind farms in Ireland. We haven't reached saturation with them yet, but there are limited locations remaining to do that. The big play, as we've talked about over the years on here, the big play, without a doubt, is offshore wind for all kinds of reasons. And probably the number one reason, Matt, is that a typical turbine performs twice as well offshore as it performs on land. And that is, again,
because the wind blows more regularly offshore than it
blows
does onshore.
More consistently, because you don't have the physical obstructions of the landscape. So you get much better consistent wind speeds out at sea. Now, yes, we have, you know, objections and so on, but we have things like the Codling Wind Park, which has got its planning. You know, they're pretty much ready to go. I won't say shovel ready. I'm not sure I don't know how many shovels are involved in building offshore wind, but these projects are ready to go. We should expect to see them coming on stream in the early 2030s. Now, that is realistic. The only negative I would say about this is that these steps, these strong build-outs on renewable energy, they've happened between 2020 and 2024. My concern, and I think a lot of observers' concerns, Matt, is that the current government doesn't seem to have the belly to continue to back renewable energy, which I think is a tragic error to not back domestic indigenous energy. You hear the right sounds from Micheál Martin occasionally, but you do not see the follow-up. I don't see any sense of passion or commitment, for example, from Darragh O'Brien as the so-called climate minister, as somebody who's driving this forward. For example, if he was interested in the renewable transition, they wouldn't have killed the Dart Plus project. That was effectively killed by pushing it back to 2030. That was a catastrophic error. And that's an error that's going to commit tens of thousands of people to sitting on the M50 for years into the future. And I do not know why our politicians persist in repeating the mistakes of the past with increasing confidence.
Isn't the big problem, though, with wind and solar is that even if we generate more power from it, that it has to be stored, and we don't have the batteries to store that.
Yeah, I mean, this is, I think, again, I'm going to stay for a moment with my good news theme. We have to break the habit every now and again. But what we see, Matt, is that incredible things have been happening with battery technology. For example, globally, the price of battery technology fell by 40%. That's 40% globally in 2024. And it's down again in 2025. So essentially, the cost of storing a kilowatt or a megawatt of energy using batteries has fallen by something like 98 to 99% in the last 20 years. There's been no other revolution. For example, internal combustion engines haven't got any more efficient, really, maybe by 1 or 2% in the last 20 years. But what we're seeing is because of the massive investment in battery technology, and this, by the way, isn't just about electric cars and stuff. For example, our smartphones, our laptops, all of these are using high-power lithium-ion battery system. So there's been investment by big companies across the globe running into tens of billions in battery technology, and we're now seeing the fruits of that technology. And a really interesting development, Matt, this week that's worth considering is that one of these energy think tanks, an organization called Ember, they calculate that what they call utility-scale battery costs can now achieve what they describe as a levelized cost of storage equivalent. In other words, that you build out a large enough battery capacity that you actually use it for what's called dispatchable power. Now, dispatchable power is the jargon, the industry jargon, for power that is standing there ready to go when you need it, right? So you press a button and off it goes. And that equation is changing in far beyond my wildest imaginings.
Well, just to finish in a minute, how do you retain your optimism when you see particularly what the Trump administration has done since it came into power in January and has a deliberate anti-climate change agenda?
Sure. And also, if you look across the weather disasters, the climate-fueled weather disasters of 2025, the fact that this year is probably the second hottest year on the instrumental record, 2024 was the hottest. You see, for example, last month over 1,100 people killed in record storms and flooding events in East Asia. And again, yes, we've had these events in the past, but again, the intensity is ramping up. So to your question, Matt, how do you stay positive? I think, to be honest with you, the situation that we're in is so serious that, you know, pessimism and defeatism is simply not an option. So we have to stay at it, we have to plug away, and we have to keep the pressure on our politicians especially.
Thank you, John Gibbons. We look forward to seeing you each Thursday in the new year.
The Last Word on Today FM.